the Sunday after Easter can land with a bit of a thud. Less fanfare, less flowers, less music, less people. Statistics, I heard this one, say that Episcopalians invite someone to church once every 17 years. I don't know if that's true, at least not here. Church of the Good Shepherd, people are always coming up to us, introducing us to their sister, neighbor, friend, whatever. But it's still a challenge on this low Sunday to hear these stories not as old news, not only as good news, but also as new news. The word gospel means good news, so it's something that comes from outside of us and appears. Our faith, then, is primarily not an argument or a logical set of propositions. Rather, it's news that is washed up on the shore of a deserted island, where as castaways we celebrate the truth. The news is that there's water in the cove nearby. There's light at the end of the tunnel. Jesus has been raised from the dead. How did the disciples respond to that news that first Easter? How did they experience that story? I want to take a look at how they heard it. Peter and Thomas and Mary Magdalene, how they heard the good news for the first time. And then thinking about what Christine preached about last week, how do we make that a part of our story? How do we share it with the world? In a perfect world with perfect disciples, that empty tomb should have been enough. The events happened just as Jesus had prophesied. He was to be crucified, buried, and resurrected after 3 days. But it wasn't enough. We don't hear about how the news of the empty tomb was told to the remaining disciples, but we do hear that they gathered in fear behind locked doors. Perhaps they had planned to share that news, to start the Christian mission, but it seems that they were, at the very least, in a state of shock, scared because authorities were looking for them, or perhaps just profoundly sad because of Jesus' death. Jesus then appeared to Mary Magdalene with instructions to inform the rest of the disciples of that appearance. And again, in a perfect world, perfect disciples, that should have been enough. But all we have is that image of the disciples huddled in that locked room. If the Passion narrative were the disciples' final exam, then these post-resurrection stories was summer school, remedial work. And they seem to have failed that test as well. The story remained within them. They were not willing to testify or to take the stand. That brings us to today's stories, to Thomas. I've heard that there's something called the CSI effect, in modern-day juries, where because of the popularity of the TV show, folks today in juries need physical evidence in deciding a case. Thomas could have been the foreman of one of those juries. He has the modern 21st century view of obtaining and processing information. Trust, but verify. Put it in writing. Let me see the DNA sample. As a culture, we continue to be gripped by such a demand for accuracy. The proliferation of TV shows and specials related to the search for Jesus shows that we're right there with Thomas. And that's not the worst thing. We're still looking for Jesus, searching for that scar. It's a reminder, at the very least, that we are no better or worse than the disciples themselves. In fact, Thomas becomes our hero, the person willing to go to whatever lengths he has to in order to determine the reliability of the resurrection appearances. He is the detective, the inspector, the searcher sent back in time on our behalf to perform our dirty work. Thomas requires the grossest and most palpable of evidence to accept the challenge that Jesus was resurrected. So that's who we are. We're still probing and searching through our doubt, aching for contact with the risen Christ. Of course, in John's account, what's important is that Thomas did not thrust his hands into the side of Jesus. Jesus said to him, put your fingers here, see my hands, reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe. Thomas said to him without hesitation or going through with his request, my Lord and my God. That's the most accurate testimony in all the Gospels to who Jesus is, my Lord and my God. That gives us a template, a model for how to do the E word, evangelism. That confession, that statement sets the stage for all the rest of us to tell the story about what happened on Easter. Peter helps out in our reading too. He's giving one of the first sermons of Christian history. He's giving one of the first defenses of the faith. It's a model for us on how we conduct an effective communication strategy to get folks coming to church. It's his method for getting butts in the pews. It's his small group formation, his potluck dinners. It's the sum total of all the evangelism strategies of all the low Sundays that have followed the glory of that Easter morning. This is what Peter does. When challenged by the high priest, he doesn't castigate. Peter doesn't wag his finger. He doesn't guilt. He doesn't shame. He doesn't try to convert. What he says isn't even that calculating. He proclaims the Easter truth. He says, you killed Jesus by hanging him on a tree, but the God of our ancestors raised him up. That's his evangelism tactic. He tells the story. He says, I thought the play had three acts, but it had four. I thought the movie was over, the credits were rolling, but then guess who shows up? I thought there was darkness, but then there was light. I thought there was death, but then there was life. That's his method of convincing them and us of this cosmic reality. In his word, he's simply a witness to these things. He's not the prosecutor. He's not the defense attorney. He's the witness. I've encountered some people in my life, some people who are like that, who can simply, by their essence and nature, communicate the transcendence and love, the good news of Jesus Christ. But only some people. Their life is a witness. It's like they've been put on the stand in the courtroom, and all their life is a transcript of bearing God's light in the world. Most of us are not like that. We're not like Peter of this Acts reading. We are Peter from before that. We are Thomas from before. Luckily, Jesus shows up anyway. He breaks down doors and walls, and he enters into our hearts. So however imperfectly, whenever we feel God's presence in our lives, we are called, like Peter and Thomas, to share his story, to sing that song, to tell the truth. Now more than ever, the stories that we tell about how we encounter Christ are needed in this broken world. They need to be shouted from the mountaintop and whispered in low voices. Through the doubt, one believes because Jesus keeps showing up in our lives in all sorts of ways. Jesus' presence forces us to proclaim the story, to testify, to echo that refrain, my Lord and my God, to witness that the Lord is risen indeed. Amen.